actually played with Jose Arias, not just a former winner, Arias, but also a year ago, came in within inches and cents of being the first two-time champion, and both of them fell short yesterday.
Yeah, that shows you how difficult this tournament is, that there's never been a repeat winner, and the numbers make it harder and harder every year, Steve, because there's more entrants, and so you've got to climb over a lot of people to get to the top of the pile, and it's very, very difficult. And also, it's a tournament you have to qualify for. You can't buy in. So that category makes it's not automatic that you're going to qualify for the next year, for 2024. You've got to go through the same rigmarole as anybody else.
Exactly right. And you got to find your way into this field. And the Gulfstream fifth is the second of the mandatories. And actually, they've reached the... We're just about 4 minutes late getting started. We'll talk about what has transpired in a minute. But, Rich, let's quickly glance at this Gulfstream fifth. It's the second mandatory of the, I'll call it the morning here. It's, of course, 2:30 in the afternoon back east and down at Hallandale. We got a very heavy favorite in here, 3-5, that pretty much figured as a 3-5 in Lunar Rocket for Rowan Crichton off the claim.
Yeah, and those are the kind of horses throughout the tournament, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that you try to beat. Nobody's playing a short-priced favorite, so you try to beat them. I guess if I would try to suggest somebody, if you're looking for a contest play, for me it might be someone like the 6, Mo Dazzle, because I like to find horses who might be able to pick up the pieces if the favorites go too fast. If there's a speed duel on the front end, I think Luis Saez might be able to sit a trip with the 6, Mo Dazzle, and maybe come on late. One last time out with Iride Ortiz, and Iride Ortiz Jr. is now riding the favorites team, so what the hey.
Well, and this is a race. The scratches didn't do this mandatory any favors, clearly, when you look at what happened, because the 1, 2, and 7 all came out, so it reduced it to a field of 5, and as a result, what was going to be around an even money favorite ends up entering the gate at 3-5. So
maybe I can root for a short field, big price. I'm 9-1 with the 6.
Well, there's a very interesting dynamic already that was established, I think, in conversation anyway, this morning. Our visit with Roger Satina and a couple of others that really felt like you were going to have to eat some chalk today. And, of course, the cancellation of Santa Anita, taking 8 races out of a potential field of 60. We had already lost Golden Gate, which was unfortunate because of their weather issues. Let's pick up the audio here from
the center, Bahamian
Pete Aiello.
Flyer out of the gate, looks for the early lead. Frosted Faith has fade, working between horses. Lunar Rocket, not much room for him. Mo Dazzle gets started ahead of him. Out the center, it's Roman Poet as they race half a mile for the finish. It's Frosted Faith and jockey Jose Ortiz with rail position at the lead. Bahamian Captain is there, second. Lunar Rocket, third at the inside, followed by Roman Poet and Mo Dazzle at the back. 2.5 lengths from first to last, Frosted Faith working off the inside. At the rail, it's Lunar Rocket and off the outside of Bahamian Castle. Fourth and Roman Poet.
At the top of the stretch, a quarter of a mile from home. Frosted Faith went 21-4 for the opening quarter and turns first with the Bahamian Captain is second. Toward the rail, Lunar Rocket is third with an eighth of a mile to go. Frosted Faith still finding. He leads by 2. At the rail, it's Lunar Rocket down the center and Bahamian Captain, but Frosted Faith is still going, and Frosted Faith goes gate to wire. Second, Lunar Rocket. Third was Bahamian Captain, then Mo Dazzle and Roman Poet. 56-3.
Well, the favorite goes down and wasn't even really, was not a question as to whether the favorite was going to take honors here as
10 minutes now to Laurel Race 6.
Frosted Faith, the 3, Anthony Margotta Jr., and in fact, earlier today, was it James? Who was it that talked about? Somebody brought this up, and maybe might have been Roger, and said that we're going to be hard pressed to take the short priced favorite. And I think we had an interest in Frosted Faith as the alternative, And 7-2 is going to be a nice price in this spot.
Yeah, not too shabby. And this is one of the easiest or exacta boxes when you play Florida or New York. The Ortiz brothers, 1-2. Either order.
There you go. There you go. And well, the favorite for a little bit, the favorite didn't even look like he was going to get second. So some people will get a couple of nickels. There won't be huge movement. 5-2, actually. I said 7-2. 7-2 was the morning line. 5-2, the final price. But even that is not a bad number, given what is probably going to be a day with modest opportunity in terms of big prices.
Yeah, you know, going back to, you know, what you mentioned this morning in your conversations with some of the fine handicappers and horse players, you know, some of the field sizes that we're seeing in everyday horse racing are getting smaller. And a lot of times the favorites are going to be harder to beat in a 4, 5, 6, 7 horse field. And so what was said earlier this morning, Steve, kind of makes sense. Sometimes you got to take only what they can give you. So, you know, you got to take some of these short price horses sometimes.
Well, this will actually move a couple of people around. Let's give you a quick glance just at the top, a couple of names in the top of the leaderboard, because we do have to turn right around and look at Laurel minutes away. The third mandatory is going to come at Maryland. Just looking up at the various board, we're 8 minutes. All right, we got a couple of minutes. So before we start to go through that race, let me at least give you a glance. As soon as this Gulfstream goes official, you'll see movement on the board, and at least for now, Robert Moore, 55-30, which frankly, at this point in the day, is a decent number, and it feels like some people are just chipping away and taking what the board is giving them. Robert Moore, 55-30. Kevin Cox, a familiar name on the contest scene, 54-10. James Henry, 50-10. Adam Burgoon, 47-50. Robert Courtney, 45-70. Kirk Rockwell, 41-70. 39-70 for Frank Polk. Robert Thanney, $39.60, $39 for Howard Johnson. I saw Howard earlier. And Neil Shippers rounds out your top 10 at $37. A few of our familiar names that come across, like A.J. Benton, and I met Howard Kravitz earlier. He's in the top 50. Nick Tamaro had seemed to have a nice, solid start. I also noticed that Philly Joe Metka has been on the board early. Doug Bradar, the longtime agent and racing official, currently without a jock. But Doug, and I think in the second, 21 right now, 21st at 29.60, early stages here of day one of the NHC. And we've got the third mandatory coming up. There'll be five to follow, and we're underway. Richie, let's take a look, start looking at this Laurel race.
Yeah, I guess, a horse that kind of makes me a little interested, Steve, maybe number six, Cover the Spread, Jevian Toledo riding for Brittany Russell. You know, I must admit, I kind of like horses that are either going to stalk or close. I know a lot of people are speed handicappers and look for horses to go wire to wire or go straight to the front. But I'm more of a trip handicapper, and I like a situation where a horse and a jockey can just take a spot, find a position, and then try to make their best run in the stretch. So maybe I might lean toward the six, Cover the Spread in the sixth.
Some excitement as a 17-1 shot is going to win the third race at Oaklawn. 17-1 shot. There you go, and there's really the first nice price of the morning. And looking down, this is Under the Gun. Steve Asmussen with son Keith in the iron, 17-1.
Oh, my goodness. You know, the thing about a tournament like this, Steve, there will be dozens and dozens of people who have this horse. It's amazing. It's amazing how people can zero in on horses like this.
Well, and Brian Troop is ready, I think, to join us. Brian, grab that mic, and we'll say good morning. And actually soon enough, 13 minutes, I can say good afternoon collectively. It'll be noon in on the West Coast, and of course, moving up toward 3 in the East Coast. No, nothing. You're good. It's automatic, that mic. And what a pleasure to have the 2010 NHC champion, Brian Troop, join us. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Outstanding. Great to see you. I'm sorry you didn't make the field this year.
Well, this game, your highs and lows, you can be a hero one day and a bum the next day of that. So.
Yeah, it is. It's a game of highs and lows.
It's a tough game.
How many qualifications overall over the years, Brian?
I haven't had that many. I've only had 9. In that.
Which is, you know, respectable. Yes. Well, and of course, we had a pandemic interference that kept...
Yeah, because of the pandemic, the last time I was in Vegas for the 2020 championship and that, and I haven't been back to the United States. I'm a Canadian.
Right.
I haven't been back to the United States until Wednesday morning when I flew out here and so on.
And kind of a last-minute decision even to come out, and it's great to have
you. On Monday, I wasn't coming, and then there's a synopsis of the weekend on horse tourneys by Eric Wang and that, and when I saw that there were 419 entries in that, just from that site, I figured, well, you got to have 600-700 entries, so I decided to come out and take a shot. Unfortunately, I found the biggest price yesterday, but that, I couldn't find much else in that. So
that listen, Jose Arias was shut out too yesterday.
Yeah, last night, Jose and myself sat drinking beer and that. Somebody came up to us and said, "I guess you guys aren't playing tomorrow if you're not out studying." I said, "You guessed right, Matt."
Well, watching the board at Oaklawn, where there is an inquiry, and I'm not sure if it involves the winner. The winner's certainly wide and clear. This does not involve the winner at all.
Yeah. Inside horses.
Yeah.
He wasn't near anybody, so
no,
I don't
he's
think
clear.
It has anything to do with him.
It's got to do with the second, third, and fourth finishers, and that includes a 9-5 shot that finished second in their victory
march.
Yeah,
the inside horse is pushing the middle, and then they squeeze the middle.
Yeah, the middle horse.
I think it's just race riding, but
he was kind of sandwiched that horse in the middle between the other two.
Let me avail ourselves, Brian, of you looking at this third mandatory. What do you make of this race at Laurel?
Well, my original thought was the Kelly Breen horse, and that I was looking, but I noticed that they bet him down pretty good in that. Which a good sign and a bad sign in that. I'm not much for taking short prices in that. I can't see.
It's behind us. 7-5 favorite is actually the Rob Attriss horse on the rail, Balpool.
Well, good luck to him. I mean, I'm not saying he can't win, but he come out of a maiden in New York, and he's stepping up a class. Looks like I didn't watch. The only races of the mandatories that I've watched replays were the two Oaklawn races and that. So I haven't really done my work in that.
You know, Brian. One comment. When horses come out of a mile chute like here at Laurel, I don't really like the inside post.
No, I don't either. In that. I mean. He can win, but I'm not taking him a contest.
Well, now the Breen horse has moved to 3-2 actually, and as you mentioned, Kelly Breen now the favorite on the outside with Crypto Mama, and 2-1 on Rob Attriss, 5-2 now. The board's a little volatile. 18-1 Naval Empire for Mike Trombetta and his main man, Larry Johnson. This is Maryland homebred. Looking at Fast Track for Arno Delacour, 9-2.
Yeah, he's the other horse that I have marked here. Is
the 9-2?
He come out of the Suncoast in Tampa Bay, and he looks like he run okay that day, and he's back in with Maryland bred, so, I mean, you know, he'd likely be messing. I mean, I could see Trombetta's horse running good in that. He's run out. He's been in the 62 non-winners of one claiming in that, and he's been not in for the tag in that. So
they obviously didn't want to put him in there. He's a scary price in that. He's 21-1, and I mean, I don't know where you can go a mile. It's the only thing.
Well, the horse that I got to bring up here, second off the layoff, second time 3-year-old filly by Will Take Charge. Cover the spread. The six in here actually just took a hit. The board is really volatile here at Laurel. Crazy. 5-1. It was just 7-1.
Mm-hmm.
You had the three horse has jumped from 9-2 down to 7-2. Now 3-1 as well. That's Fast Track, the Delacour filly that we just talked about. About set here.
If I'm in the contest, I know who I'm playing. The two.
All right, and I'll take Brittany Russell. I'll take Brittany Russell with cover the spread, the six, who's 5-1.
I'll take a chance. This horse can run a mile.
Just about set here, and
I'm a Brittany Russell fan too, Steve.
Does a good job.
She does a really good job.
Trying to find the Laurel. There's the Laurel feed, and there's my man. That's a Gulf Stream. All right, hang in there. Here we go. I think we're just about set.
And they're off. Jeannie Abrella, Miss Fussy Pence, and Crypto Mama on the far outside showing early foot. And Bow Pool moving forward from the inside draw. Here's in between horses, Fast Track down the back stretch now. Miss Fussy Pence, Crypto Mama on the outside. Jeannie and Abrella, three wide, Fast Track in the two path. Inside is Bow Pool is tugging right along within a length and a half or two of the front. Cover the spread. Settles in about five off the early speed. A Synergy's Electra in the back of the pack. But Naval Empire down to the inside. Only five and a half or six lengths will cover them. They are led by Miss Fussy Pants from Jeannie and a Bridle, only about three quarters of a length, and Crypto Mama on the outside. Bow Pool saving ground there from fourth position. Fast Track and a pinch there from fifth. Cover the spread, racing six, only four or five from the front. Naval Empire racing on the inside, and Synergy Electa at the tail of the field with three and a half furlongs left to go. Miss Fussy Pants is in charge from Jeannie and a Bridle. Crypto Mama third of the outside. They're followed by Cover the Spread trying to get underway out wide of the track from fourth. Bow Pool under some pressure there in fifth position. And there followed by Fast Track. Naval Empire saving ground at the top of the lane. And Synergy's Electra turning for home. Miss Fussy Pants quarter mile in from Cover the Spread on the outside. Cover the Spread's coming with a run. Crypto Mama in between horses still with a fighting chance. Crypto Mama moves to second now and taking aim at Miss Fussy Pants with one furlong left to go. Crypto Mama just in front. Crypto Mama, Miss Fussy Pants second on the inside and cover the spread, and Bow Pool is fourth. Here's Crypto Mama cashing in. Crypto Mama wins it. Second, Miss Fussy Pants. Then let's cover the spread. Bow Pool fourth.
Well, the favorite able to wear down a very game Miss Fussy Pants.
Yeah, Miss Fussy Pants has got a claim on Anthony Farrier. Ran her eyeballs out there.
What'd you think?
That was my original pick, but if I'm playing the contest, I likely don't play under that. The horse that I played in that, he was a little further back than I thought. And he did come running, and he beat his odds in that. I think he finished fourth, maybe third.
Well, and the filly of Brittany Russell's kind of loomed up and was moving nicely, but was wide and then flattened out in the stretch. So you are going to get those that went for Miss Fussy Pants, they're going to get an 8-1 place price. And when it comes to a mandatory, Brian, for you, when it comes to a mandatory, you're satisfied. At least you get a little something, even if your 8-1 shot doesn't win.
That's likely my problem. As I came on the show and I said the horse that I had marked
right
was the 9. But if I'd played the contest, I would have gone and bet the 2, because he's 9-5 and the 2's 21-1.
When you and in fact on that topic, as we
I thought the 2 would be closer to the pace than he was, and that he ran good through the line.
I guess you can't see anything now.
No, well, they switched the the feeds up pretty quickly. This is in the background. You'll hear Chris Griffin and New York with the fourth race. We've got a nice little respite here as we reach noon on the West Coast, 3 o'clock in the East, and 40 minutes basically, give or take, 45 minutes maybe, to the next mandatory, which will be at Oaklawn, which has produced the best price. And speaking of that price, 69.40, now your new leader, Adam Burgoon, jumps up and clearly had himself a piece in that Steve Asmussen, Keith Asmussen winner at Oaklawn. Patrick Kennedy emerges as well, 66.50. Paul Kush, 64.60. Kevin Cox, 63.90. Tom O'Connor, $60. So there's your top five. And actually, you know, for all the speculation that we were going to have a fairly chalky day, those are decent numbers early, right? At this point in the afternoon.
Yeah, and I understand that. It looks chalky.
The whole card today, and that I thought this yesterday in the first chance, last chance. I thought the same thing. I told somebody that the early races and that they looked chalky, and that I was going to save my optional bets and that, and I did that, but I. All I could catch was the last mandatory and so on. And I think my impression of today, although I didn't really do the work because I wasn't playing
right.
And so on. But
Well, and here's an interesting, Richie, as well, here's an interesting aside to the leader, Adam Burgoon. He forges to the lead utilizing the Oaklawn price horse. But as it happens, he was willing to take Crypto Mama and just go ahead and take the $10.20, because I see that he went from 69.40 to 79.60. So he went ahead and just said, all right, mandatory, I'm taking the most likely winner.
Yeah, if I'm taking 9-5, I want to be right like 4 times out of 5 for sure. Like, because if something stupid comes in, you're taking a real beating. So that's why I'd sooner play the 20-1 shot. And
so I guess that tells us, Brian, he must have really.
I'm going to watch the replay again here.
He must have really liked that horse to take the short price, you know, and he was right. You know,
Patrick Kennedy keeps pace. Paul Kush, Ray Gallant, Anthony Spinozola, Gary Bros, Robert Moore, Kevin Cox, Tom O'Connor, Jim Meeks. Your top 10 right now, and looking at the leaderboard, $28, guys, is the hundredth rung, position. So from the leader, just under 80, down to about 30. So about a $50 spread separating the top 100.
You know, one thing about these day one scores is you really can't win the tournament on day one, but you can lose it if you don't get any points. So these people are doing a good job getting some scores.
When you don't do any good on day one, you're more into the stab mode the day two, and that you're
well, and you get desperate, and you don't put yourself in the position. You're up against it, and you're basically limiting your strategic options.
Yeah, because if you score very poorly on day one, then you can't take a 3 or 4-1 shot in day two, because you got to make up all that extra ground that you did not get on the day one.
Really, in that last race, the only horses that really did any running were the 5 and the 9. That one was a real sucker.
It was a favorite for a flash or two before the Kelly Breen moved up and took over. as the favorite and as the winner. Gulfstream is up to their sixth race, and when it comes to Oaklawn, just looking up here, they're going to run the fourth race, and then the fifth is your next mandatory. That's around 3:47 you're looking at for the next mandatory. So we got a little bit of time. I know that, I think Christina Blacker is going to swing by and join us in a little bit. Looking forward to that. And
I know Christina. It was after when I won the national championship. I was at Churchill Downs playing the Breeders' Cup and that. And she asked if I would do an interview with her on that. So they don't ask me anymore. When you win, they don't ask you as often.
Brian, you bring up, it's funny you say that, because about playing in the BCBC, because one of the topics that really kind of came to a head this morning with a lot of the crossover guests that, you know, we're talking the weekend racing and previewing the stakes, most notably at Tampa, but we talked about the difference between cash money play, BCBC contest play, and the $2 mythical win plays.
The difference is enormous.
Exactly. Talk a little bit, and Rich can obviously chime in on this too. I mean, how do you mentally separate your approach, and or do you have to? I mean, this can be a quandary.
If you want to win any contest, you got to be prepared to be zero. I don't care what contest you play in. If you want to baby it in a cash contest, you're not going to get anything in that. The Breeders' Cup, you're playing $2,500 entry fee. If you don't want to play to win, why pay the $2,500? You bet the $2,500 and...
Well, $7,500, the $2,500 to the prize pool and $7,500 the bankroll.
Yeah. I've played in 3 Breeders' Cup tournaments, and I've got the pleasure of having zero at the end. And I mean, that's how I play. I'll play a horse I like. If I'm wrong, and the one thing, if I go down, I go down on long shots in that. And the 2015 Breeders' Cup at Keeneland, we came to the Fillies and Mares mile and 3/8 or whatever the distance is they use at Keeneland and that. And I liked, I can't remember the horse's name, but Chris Schmulen rode him in that. And Ramsey's horse won the race. But at the...
Stephanie's Kitten, maybe.
At the Kitten's Joy, I think it was.
Well, Stephanie's Kitten. Are you talking the boys' race or the Filly and Mare Turf?
The Filly and Mare Turf.
It would have been...
It was a kitten horse that
would have been Stephanie's Kitten, probably.
Yeah.
One of his kittens.
But anyways,
one of the many kittens.
Make a long story short, I mean, my horse was like 20, 25. He was a big price on that. I had 66 left in my account, man. It was about mid-afternoon on the Saturday and that. And I just liked the horse. At the 3/8 pool, my horse was inside, and right beside him was Ramsey's horse that won the race. Somehow Smulin got off the rail. Ramsey's horse stayed on the rail. They came around the final turn at Keeneland. Smulin's at least 9 or 10 wide in that. And he come flying down the lane and ended up losing by a length and a half. In that. I had 3,000 to win on him in that. So.
That close to greatness.
And I'm pulling it up. I was right, actually. It was Stephanie's Kitten. You were looking at...
Who was the horse? I think it's Smulin that rode it. He finished third or fourth?
Queen's Jewel. Queen's Jewel? Yeah. It wasn't Smulin. Max.
It was a French rider.
Maxime Guillon.
Okay.
Maxime Guillon on Freddie Head's Queen's Jewel.
You watch the replay of the race and tell me afterwards who was the best horse. But...
At 12 to 1, too.
Yeah. Ramsey's horse sniveled up the rail. Where did my horse finish? Third or fourth?
Third.
Huh?
Third.
I knew it was third or fourth in that. But what was his odds then?
12 to 1.
Is that all? I thought he was higher than that, but anyway, I had 3,000
well,
to win on.
Oh, Jesus. Oy. Well, I, you know what? That does give me one little window to mention a horse that I've been saving on my screen here, and this is just a little piece of news. Malavath from the Breeders' Cup Mile this year at Keeneland, who we loved at a gigantic number, and she ended up running into all kinds of trouble, was fifth, beaten two lengths for everything. It just so happens, I went to go look at, there he is, you come see us when you get a chance. Scotty McKeever, everybody, Equine Edge. I forget how we, good start. Philly Joe, everybody. She is at Payson Park. I reached out to Christoph Clement because she had been Moyglare stud and had bought her. And sure enough, I said to Chris, I said, do you have Malavath at Payson? And he said, I do. So she is in the United States. She's going to have a U.S. campaign. And I'm a huge fan of this filly. And she will emerge here at some point in the spring.
Who trained her before?
Oh, my God. Henri Graffard with the three names. Henri Graffard. Henri Graffard.
One of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got three names, and they go in some order. Yeah.
You're asking a question to Brian and myself about, you know, winning a big tournament and different strategies. I know when Louis Filoso and myself, we won the championship at the Orleans a few years ago here in Vegas. And I know Louis was a big proponent of playing to target numbers every day.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once you reach your target, then you can go ahead with your extra bullets and try to exceed your target, and you try to build upon that. So that worked out very well for us in the year that we won, and we were able to get ourselves into position where the last race of the tournament, we were able to get a horse home at 11-1 that Louis loved, and so that worked out very well for us, Steve, playing the target numbers.
Well, as I mentioned earlier today, everybody's sending best wishes out to yes. Lou Filoso and his wife. He's home with her. I knew she was ailing, but Rich, with the details, a pelvic fracture.
Yeah, she fell. Louis told me she fell and broke her pelvis. And certainly, all our best wishes to Louis and to Franny. And hopefully, everything works out well, and she gets back on the rehab. We want to see him back out here in Vegas, Louis.
All the best. All the best. Jersey wives are named Franny because, of course, Franny Raffetto, Lou Raffetto's wife, is a Franny as well.
Another Franny. There we go.
They're all, and sitting in front of us, Christina Blacker. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I actually can officially now at 12:11 Pacific time. It's now good afternoon for everybody in North America, so I can make the transition.
Indeed. Yeah. How's your day gone so far?
Well, you know, we did the morning show, and now this is the afternoon shift. It's like a Greyhound track here, basically. There's the first session, and then there's the evening session.
Yes. And how does it work as the races are going up? You just listening in, or you?
We pick spots. You know, we use all the mandatories, and we use them as the signposts. And, you know, and then if there's interesting big fields that catch our attention, we'll do some handicapping and go that way.
I just saw David Harrison a second ago.
Yeah, he's right here.
And his best bet of the day is in this race that's going off at Gulfstream right now. He tells me the 6. He's hoping that he turns his luck around right here on the 6 at Gulfstream.
Well, this is the 6th at Gulfstream as it happens. And just looking up, that happens to be a horse of Mrs. Weber's. That I can tell right away. The very familiar white jacket and the red dots in the black sleeves. Our flag flying at 4-1. So we'll see if we'll see how this might as well listen in.
Flag
flying on the outside now. Third, Greek Mojo begins to drop back fourth. Off to the outside, it's Spun Oats, then Gomo Mischief. Stuck in Malibu, tries to launch a bit, while about 7 lengths off the lead, the trailer is Nadu Dick. There's a quarter of a mile left to go, and Kakuya is still the target through 3/4 and 13-2. On the outside, our flag flying from between horses, Yamiles, then it's Spun Oats, grandstand side, and Stuck in Malibu with Nadu Dick. Final eighth of a mile, Kakuya left alone a long time, and she's still there. Nadu Dick charging hard down the center, Nadu Dick gaining ground, but at a time, Kakuya wins. Nadu Dick second, Gomo Mischief third, fourth is Spun Oats, then Stuck in Malibu.
Well, you're going to end up here. You're going to end up with a $23 horse, essentially. And I think, in fact, the runner-up is going to be a $20 horse.
Steve, I noticed over at Michael Beachock's table they were celebrating like crazy. So
yeah, they could have that horse.
Yeah, yeah. So a few of them were high-fiving.
Yeah, this Jack Cistern got it from Doug O'Neill out in California, and that, and it's. He run him in. He looks like he run him 5 furlongs in that, and stretching him out today. He's more than ready out of a blame mare in that, so he's definitely eligible in that to be a decent turf horse in that.
Well, and got away with pretty mundane fractions as well, and just basically, you know, kind of floated along.
Actually, the horse that I liked in the race and ran, I think, fourth in that was the Canadian trainer, Katarina. Valisguev, or whatever you pronounce her name in that. And that horse actually run a good race considering the pace of the race in that.
Well, this is going to shake things up. This will be a $30 be a $30 bump for some people.
I've been surprised. I don't feel like the atmosphere has gotten too big, too noisy, too loud just yet today. I know we've had a lot of short prices as far as the mandatory races go, but it feels like we haven't seen that kind of roar from this room that I think we're used to every year.
Well, and you had the 1 17-1 shot. This is really the second sizable price of the afternoon. Kahulia 10-1, and Nod to Debt is your runner-up at 9-1. And in fact, tell you what, even Gomo Mischief in the third slot at 11-1. This is going to be a beautiful try with Spun Oats, the 6-5 favorite. And I tell you, the favorite never.
I'm surprised that the Spun Oats was 6-5. I didn't see the. I wasn't looking before the race on that. I don't know how she'd be 6-5.
Well, did not impact this at all. So this will be interesting. We'll see. We're certain to see some names jump up and get involved here. One of the other aspects that is interesting to watch are the double entrants. We'll watch for some of those. I just saw a couple flash by that are basically moving in tandem. When you've got two entries, and we discuss this every year. You know, early on, a lot of times you'll keep them on parallel tracks, and it's all strategy, Rich, right? I mean, some people will play two separate, and then whichever one starts to make a forward move, you go on with that one as your prime ticket, yeah. And then start to play, you know, reaches in the other ticket.
I remember somebody telling me years ago, he said, Brian, if you're playing two tickets or three tickets or something, once you hit a long shot on one ticket, he said, don't, if you play a long shot on the other ticket, you better play it on that one, because you'll end up, having one shot on one ticket, one on another, and so on and that. I know a guy in Kentucky, Mel, I can't remember his last name in that, but he used to, in the $150 Keeneland ones back in all around 210, 29, and so on. Anyways, Mel would always have 6 entries, 3 in his own name and 3 in his wife's name in that. And sure enough, at the end of the day, you'd need 180 to win, like on 15 races in that. And Mel would have 100 on every damn one in that. He'd have 6 entries and have 100 each one because he's playing that way in that.
Yeah, that is a tournament player's lament when you put the wrong horse on the wrong ticket, or maybe the right horse on the wrong ticket, that kind of thing.
When you get one entry in front, throw the other one away, type of thing.
And just focus your effort. We've had this conversation with Roger Satina, because I remember the year that Roger, you know, he's been second in this twice. And there was a year where the first year that Roger had 2 tickets, and he swore afterward that he wasn't that he wouldn't do it again, that he would not have a two-ticket approach, that he would just get his seat and be happy with it. Because he felt that it was too, there's already enough mental gymnastics that you're doing to start putting that on you, and to get frustrated when you make that miscue, that's even worse.
You end up frustrated when you're winning, too, at that point. You can be winning and feel frustrated because you're winning on the wrong ticket and not advancing yourself in general.
Yeah, if you get the cap horse on one, and then you play another ticket and you get a cap horse on it, it's going to throw your mind right out of whack on that.
$30.20 is the boost that players got from this, and it's official, but it'll take a second for the board. One nice innovation is that the last couple of years, the leaderboard is in almost instant sync with the official results. And in fact, Sean Turner has jumped up at 84.40. There's got to be a few other names. My man Paul Weiser, who we talked to earlier, the professor from Pittsburgh State in Massachusetts, he had the winner, 68.40. And, you know, Paul, you've seen Paul's name for years.
Paul's a good handicapper. He's, don't kid yourself. He's one of the top of the tour.
Here's Fairgrounds and John Dooley bringing him home, but it's got a couple of this long stretch, 1,308 feet, and they're grinding away, and they're not going to change the order of finish, it doesn't look like. 1-5 in the third. 1-5 in the third at Fairgrounds, and the people that were starting to get excited, they got less excited as they got deeper in the stretch. And just curious to see what we got for prices in here. They're struggling internet-wise here with,
you know. It's like 2-1 on that winner.
2-1 winner? Oh, there you go. There's the perfect. 2-1. Here's the Oaklawn fourth as they're coming now fast and furious. And
good start for Big Nick. Big Nick on the inside of Lake Radio.
Jim Byers, of course, now taking over the calling duties at Oaklawn for the foreseeable future. Jim Byers from Vic is playing.
I haven't seen him, but he's here.
Mojo Man is trailing the field as they race past the half mile marker.
We can pick it up.
Inside is Big Nick. Up to the outside, Mozilla. Those two are heads apart here. And Mozilla with a head in front. That Big Nick, 2.5. And it's Slam Dunk Sermon, who's racing in third. Slam Dunk Sermon is racing in between runners as they come to the head of the stretch. And it's Lake Radio, it's a path off the rail. Windcrackers on the extreme outside as they come for home. Then Mojo Man and Totalizer, they're in the stretch. Mozilla has the lead, but Slam Dunk Sermon is out after him. Godzilla with the lead by two. Slam Dunk Sermon trying hard. Lake Radio is next in third. As they come to the finish, Godzilla, there's no stopping him, and he's going to win it off clear by some three lengths over Slam Dunk Sermon and Lake Radio. It was wide open.
This will be the Diodoro with Nick Juarez, 3-1. Godzilla Sermon was the 5-2. Slight favorite over that one, and so nothing thrilling price-wise as we turn our attention next to the Oaklawn fifth, which is our next mandatory, the fourth of the afternoon. We've got Christina Blacker with us, Brian Troop, your 2010 NHC champion, and of course Rich Eng for Pro Pick, and of course I finally now have my new revised edition of Rich Eng's Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies.
Yep, autographed copy to you and Tina.
I need that because I'm likely the dummy.
I wouldn't say that, Brian.
We've been working on some new social media segments at FanDuel as of late because, of course, our biggest mission right now is to try and pull the sports bettors into horse racing. And so I can say we have several copies of your book just to try and realize where we need to start, where we need to begin to try and make this language and our world more accessible to those traditional sports bettors.
Christina, I'm so glad you brought that up because I have to tell you about a conversation I had with the Wiley Publishing people more than a year ago when they approached me about doing a second edition. And, you know, not every dummies book has a second edition. You have to sell enough copies to merit second edition. So we were on the conference call, and one of the researchers for Wiley said, you know, one of the things we're looking at, Rich, is that sports gambling is growing by leaps and bounds in this country, and we feel that a rising tide or a growing tide will raise all boats. And so, you know, they thought that horse racing, if it's done right, and I like your conversation, is that you can basically jump on that and grow horse racing at the same time that sports is growing too. So, you know, we'd love to see it.
I mean, that's what we're hoping, certainly at FanDuel, and to try and just impress upon those bettors that you don't have to wait until the weekend for your team to play. You don't have to wait until Saturday to get plus 150 on your team. Oftentimes, the odds are better in horse racing, and the return is so much quicker when the timeout is happening during your football game. You can actually play a horse race and get better odds in that minute and a half, 2 minutes. Yeah. Than the entire game. So we're hoping to make the accessibility, the on-demand capability of horse racing more attractive.
Yeah, I tell folks here in Vegas that you don't have to wait 3 hours to see if you're going to win a minus 110 bet on a football game. It might take a minute and 12 seconds, and you hit a 5-1 shot, and bang, you know, all of a sudden you got money.
And in most of these sports bets, I mean, you're getting like 6-5, 7-5, or something.
Minus 110.
Like, I mean, you just saw in the mandatory race at Laurel. I liked the 9 horse in that, and when I saw that he was 9-5, I wanted to play him in the contest in that.
But,
in other words, I'd be no good for sports betting because I want 20-1.
A sports bettor would have jumped up and down at that price. You know,
different horse in the race now. You will need to cancel your original bet on the machine and then make a new bet.
You know, if you're hearing Ryan Skirkin here,
the horse, there's nothing you need to do. You'll get your
He's just
bet
mentioning there's a late scratch in the ball. And here's another challenge in this contest is how you have to be so aware of everything around you the entire time, because you may have put a horse in, let's say, you know, at Law, this race. It's actually a 8-horse field with some interesting prices, 2-1 favorite, but you know, there's some middle prices. It looks like, there's three. It's an interesting field actually, because there's four horses, 2-1, 2-1, 5-2, 3-1, and 9-2, which traditional handicapping, Rich, I'm sure you touch on this, when the public is having that much trouble making a clear favorite, that's usually an indication that it's a wide open race.
When you get in these contests, or at least when I get in these contests, I'm relaxed here talking to you today and so on and that. If I was in this contest, I'd be standing there and someone could speak to me, and it just, I mean, I've got a lot of my friends, you know, troop, I spoke to you and you never said a word. I'm just...
You're focused.
I'm focused and watching it.
Sure.
And that. And I'm actually not a very nice person when I'm playing races in that. I've used
sure.
some bad language at times to people in that. That are, you know, get away from me and so on and that.
You're focused.
I'm a completely different person playing in a contest, especially if I'm doing well in the contest.
You know, Brian, every player in this room is going to have some bad beats, some tough
oh, yeah.
beats, disqualification, horses taken down. There's going to be things that'll put you on tilt.
When you're talking about bad beats, I remember when I first started playing horses 50 years ago, I used to, well, the jockeys, no good, or harness racing. I remember one day, I was at the harness races at Greenwood in Toronto, and Stevie Condren had just won a race in that, and I'm down at the paddock, like I'm 20 years old then, cursing him and so on. Anyways, I can't remember who the trainer was. He grabbed me by the thing, and he says, come with me. And I was scared of that. He took me over to the replay, and he showed me. He said, you see that horse? Like Steve finished second in the race in the horse. He says, you see how steppy that horse is going around the turns and that? He says, Steve Condren should be commended for the job he did to get around, to keep that horse on stride and so on. I said, he took me back and he says, you tell him that you were wrong in that. I didn't know whether the guy was going to kill me in that.
Nope. You learned something. We learned something.
That's a good lesson, actually.
Yeah.
But, and since I used to complain when I lost races in that, and I remember someone else saying to me one day, "Troop, you ever think that maybe you just picked the wrong horse?"
Well, no. And frankly, the internet has made that has actually brought that into focus. That if people now have an outlet to basically shout that it can't possibly be my fault. It had to be somebody else's fault. The jock's fault. Trainer's inept. Anybody, or even when they win, because of the odds changes, and you know, at this point, you would think that the entire betting public understands why we're getting these late odds changes. But it's an atmosphere you never. You used to have to deal with it, maybe with the people at your picnic table or the people sitting with you in the grandstand. Now, I mean, it's a cacophony that scrolls out in front of you on the internet constantly.
Sometimes you feel like not everyone needs to have a voice every now and then with the way that they're using it, right? What happens to kind of, if you can't say something nice, don't say something at all. I don't know how many times I find myself looking at Twitter at night, looking at different, and some things people say just make my skin crawl. It takes everything I can not to respond or to say something, but I try to stay out of it as much as I can because...
Yeah, social media has given everybody a voice, so now you get people in horse racing, fans who think they're smarter than Bob Baffert, they're smarter than Todd Pletcher, they're smarter than Flavien Prat. You know, it's like these guys become instant experts, but they have a platform because of Twitter, Facebook, whatever.
I think to the point with the jockeys, too, I think unless you've actually sat on a horse... It's difficult to be too critical of what you see out there sometimes. And I mean, I grew up riding and was on horses for decades, but I've never ridden in a race either. So I might have an opinion on something that I've seen in a horse race, but still, I've never been a jockey. I've never been in that environment. My dad told me and has reiterated it all the time. When you're riding and when you come back from an injury or if you've been away, as much as it comes back to you physically, you don't really remember how fast everything happens until you're back in the saddle in the middle of a horse race and until you're in that experience again, that it's just, you cannot replicate it in any other environment or training purpose. Yeah,
it's one thing to exercise on an equisizer, it's another thing to be in a race, right?
Which is hard enough as it is.
Well, and you also are in a unique position. You've got your public persona as a pundit and a TV analyst and a woman, and you've got your husband who's training horses professionally. So it's tough.
In a lot of ways, I think, obviously his perspective helps me to learn a little bit more about the game and to see the ups and downs and to see the challenges that he faces, just trying to get horses ready, just trying to get horses into the right races, just trying to get owners to pay their bills. I mean, there's so much that happens day to day. You deal with so much disappointment as a trainer. Every day something goes wrong, whether it's a horse that goes to the farm, a horse that didn't work well, a horse that didn't get into the right race. But I think the living through that experience has made me a little bit better at what I am doing in the afternoons, because I can call on some of those experiences as I'm trying to analyze a race, and vice versa. He can ask my opinion on a jockey that he thinks might suit a horse, tactics, strategy in a race once it comes out on paper. So we've definitely, through the challenges of the game, I think made each other a little bit better at what we do respectively.
You know, you make an interesting delineation between a trainer and a jockey, because when something happens to a jockey on a horse in a race, well, he has to turn the page because he probably has a ride in the next race or whatever the rest of the day. But with a trainer, I mean, something happens with a horse or in a race, it might be a month before he gets the horse back to the race again.
Completely. But yeah. And I think mentally it's a different kind of animal as well, because as a rider, you have to just, like you say, turn the page, compartmentalize, start fresh in the next race and go out there ready to win again. Whereas if you're the trainer and you lose a race, you need to go back and reflect on everything you've done. You need to go back and say, what could I have done to win? Because this is a game of inches in the end. Should I have worked this horse faster? Should I have worked them slower? Were they fit? Is this the right distance, the wrong distance, the equipment? It's a very different post-losing experience for the trainer versus the jockey.
Yeah, well, Christine, you're talking about in that, it's an easy game for a bettor. You can play a horse in a race in that, and you can throw it away after. A jockey, after he runs in a race in that, he's on to the next one, but the trainer, he's the one that if things didn't go right, he's got to tell an owner and so on and whatever else. And
that's true.
What went wrong and so on and that. And a lot of times, nothing really went wrong. It's you didn't get the right trip. I mean, the best horse doesn't always win in that.
That's what's difficult coming into this weekend, too, is you can be so right and have bad luck. Bad racing luck can undo all of your handicapping. All of your studying can just be gone in an instant.
Yeah, because if you get a bad ride on a horse and so on and that. And those guys aren't out there trying to ride bad in that either. So, we all make mistakes in that.
Yeah, the thing about the jockeys and the trainers is they get paid to win. When they don't win, they don't get paid. It's not like a professional athlete where you have a guaranteed contract. You know, so win, lose, or draw, your paycheck comes in the mail or gets deposited. So jockeys and trainers have to win.
As Christina says, sometimes it's hard to get these owners to pay the money in there. They want 30, 60 days, whatever. Like, I know it must be tough in that. I often wonder why what you'd maybe consider not the top trainers, and I would include Christina's husband in that. I don't never know why someone wants to give somebody 80 or 90 horses, and they won't give a somebody like a Dan Blacker more horses than he's got. I mean, if he's got 30 or 40 horses, he's going to win more races than that. I mean, if you don't have a horse, you can't win a race. You can't make the horse run.
Well, years ago, you couldn't have more than 40 stalls. That
Pardon?
Was the rule. Years ago, you could not have more than 40 stalls at the racetrack. I think it was Jerry Hollendorfer that got that rule changed in California, that you could have more than one barn. And that was really the beginning of this consolidation and the idea of the sort of super trainers. And it's also the super owners, too, that are giving all 20, 30, 2-year-olds that they have to one person. You got to give it to the guy that you think can win, and I respect every owner that's paying the bills, but it does have a knockoff effect on the entire product and the product that we're showcasing today for all the horse players here.
Yeah, you know, when I started working in New York many, many moons ago, this will tell you how old I am, but you know, the thing about the limited stalls for trainers, you know, even guys like Woody Stevens and John Neighbor, you know, these guys, they had to deal with a certain allotment of stalls. They didn't have 300 horses to train like some of these super trainers with the divisions all over the place.
And they really weren't interested in having more horses than they could put their hands on.
Case in point, Richard Mandela, he does not want more than 40 horses. He could easily have 3 barns, but Richard Mandela has not taken on more than 40 because he feels like that's the number for him to be keeping a closer eye on all of them.
7-2 and 4-1. There was some noise for Tampa for the 7th race, but very quickly, the 7-2 second choice overhauled the field and wins. While we were talking also, they finished up in New York where you had Necromancer with Dylan Davis, a handy winner, $38 mutual total. He had an 11-1 shot. We are now about 10 minutes to that Oaklawn 5th. Let's look ahead to that race if we would. And, here, Christine, we can get you.
You can look at mine too if you want. I've actually looked at the replays of this race and that.
We should mention, I think the New York horse got Shiloh Merwitz to the top of the leaderboard, 98-10. And that $100, and here's A.J. Benton swinging by. Brian, let's hand A.J. the mic for a second. You stay where you are. That's fine. You're fine. You're fine. A.J., you made a bold move. What did you hit?
Necromancer at Aqueduct.
Necromancer. We just said $38 between the two.
He just made sense. There's a ton of speed in that race, and he was going to sit right off of it all.
He was a horse I played last time. Didn't really run great, but I felt like he was going to get the setup today on the trip. So,
what did you play? What? How many had you played up to now?
That's I played four optionals. I got six left.
Very nice. And what have you done in the mandatories?
I've had two wins in a second so far. So
you just chipping along. Just make sure you get a little something.
Yeah, I thought it was a grind day. I didn't really see any cap horses today, so I thought it was more of a low end day. I hate when I don't have a great feel for it because it's usually a lot of chalk and they just bury you with chalk all day.
So. Well, and what did you think was gonna? What did you think you wanted to post today, day one?
$70, but I'm way ahead of there.
Holy cow! So you're in great shape, $86.50, and you got all kinds of.
Yeah, I got six plays left on six and five, so I got 11 plays left.
Outstanding. And one thing we should mention, I mean, here it is. It's 3:38 on the East Coast. We've only got 20 races left on the afternoon.
I know.
20 races, which is a pretty... The Golden Gate Santa Anita cancellations, I mean, even if there weren't cap horses in there, just losing 16 races from the menu.
I love Golden Gate, so for me it really hurts my pride, you know what I mean? And I had a couple horses at Santa Anita that I've been waiting on for about a month and a half now that came back to run today, obviously.
So now they'll re-enter for next weekend.
Yeah.
All right, well, you tell Christina and she'll be able to whisper them on the air.
I'm curious, what's your strategy? Are you just replays? Are you speed figures? What do you focus on?
Replays, judging the pace. If I see something that just looks odd on the track, like you'll see them bury horses behind and just chair seat it all the way around. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. So obviously that was just a public workout. And they're going to unleash them when they get what they're looking for value. You know, I hate to be mean, but trainers need to get paid too.
We were just talking about that. No.
Yeah, trainers need to get paid too. You know, I treat, I'm an equal opportunity trainer employer. I think they are all the same. So, and I, you know, hopefully I can just keep moving here. I'm way above what I thought I was going to be. So I'm just going to keep playing through it, see if I can get to my other number, which I don't know if I'm going to get to that number, but I'll keep that one to myself for now.
All right. Well, you check in as the afternoon progresses. One of our favorites, A.J. Benton, who is first on the scene when it comes to the NHC. It's unbelievable. And a fabulous story when he hit, of course, when he hit the final table that first year, a forklift operator. I mean, you can't. It's just so ideal. I mean, it's unbelievable.
They say for yesterday, 40% increase in those that were playing the Thursday Last Chance qualifier versus years past.
Well,
it's
and
growing.
Here's a past champion. Jose Arias, a past champion. You've got some of the
We
top
were drinking
players.
Beer last night. not in the room watching replays.
That's
too
funny.
You become a bum in this game very quickly.
7 minutes to post. Let's give everybody a winner here in this Oaklawn fifth race.
I watched the replays of this race on some of the horses, not them all. And that I watched Bolivia or whatever his name is, closing sprinter. He came up the rail and he was even at best and so on. And that I wasn't impressed with what I saw. Johnny Ortiz's horse closed, but he was in a 25. Danny Pish's horse, he couldn't stand up on the track in that. He finished fourth in that race, but he was obviously not getting hold of the track in that. And I think he's got a great chance in here in that. But the horse that was closing the best of the race of them all, and I think it's the fact that Tammy Hornsby ran the horse for 15 and now she's raised it back up to 40 again. This horse was actually running the best of all the horses that I watched and through the lane.
Let me ask you a question, Brian. I looked at the number 10, Storm Strategy. When I see the horse claimed by Steve Asmussen for 16 and running for 40 today, I mean, does that tell you something? Or and he puts his kid on.
I didn't watch the replay, partly because the slow, it looks like it was a pretty bad track that day.
the variant's 33, so I didn't watch that race in that, on his horse and that.
Partly
because I figured he'd be too low.
Yeah. And Steve owns the horse. Yeah, he's listed as the owner and the trainer, so he put his own money up.
I'll give you a crazy horse. Scotty McKeever's going to join us too from Equine Edge, and we're going to ask how Equine Edge, and you've got to also do some race lens conversation. But there's a winner at Gulfstream. What was that horse? The six?
Six horse at Gulfstream.
It looks like it was Bruno Chicken Dance's horse.
There's a Canadian reference. There's a horse in here.
No, it's not his colors.
Oh my gosh. I look up here. This horse scratched, which is really too bad. Work all day. Michael Hewitt, and the reason I was interested, if you notice, there's no speed in this race. Next to no speed. And
which race are you talking?
The
mandatory?
The mandatory, yeah.
Fun.
But Work All Day showed speed in that last start, which is something I absolutely love. A horse that hadn't shown speed in its previous starts.
Scratched.
I know. I mean, I'm just pointing out that as a handicapping angle, one of my favorite things, even if they faded, they got beat a dozen lengths, it doesn't matter. If they suddenly showed speed, there's a real chance they'll show speed again, and then you look at a field like this, a hungry field of Archie Maiden claimers, and there's nobody that's obvious to take the lead. Maybe there is on Equine Edge, and Scotty will tell us, but Richie, what are you doing in here?
Well, I was just asking Brian about the 10 horse because, I saw Steve Asmussen claim this for 16. He owns the horse himself in his own name, and he puts his kid up and raises him to maiden 40. So, he must think this horse has a better, chance to improve.
Yeah, well, he moved the horse up.
And they've already got a win on the day. Storm Strategy, certainly the fastest horse coming in. And, swing that over for a second. Let's welcome in for the first time this weekend Scotty McKeever, who's Equine Edge, continues to make a splash. How you been?
I've been very well, Steve. How about you?
Excellent. We had so much fun last summer. It was 2 years ago was the summer. Last NHC, we had a riot handicapping with Equine Edge on the fly, and you keep tweaking and adjusting and creating and conjuring up more options for those that are using it to help them pick winners.
I was really surprised. Like last year, we had about 10 Equine Edge players. This year, we have about 100, maybe 150. It's incredible.
It is incredible
to see what's going on with Equine Edge and how it's kind of picking up. Because a lot of people are busy and they don't have time to handicap for hours and hours. And I think that's where Equine Edge comes into play. Like you talk about a pace number. I don't know if the one's going to win, but we show the one all in good time, having the most speed in the race, and our pace number is incredibly accurate. Again, it doesn't predict who's going to win, but it does look from a pace perspective like all good in time will have the lead.
Well, and you get
the two horse shows so the one horse has a 71 out of 100 and the two horse has a 49. So it's,
what about the four horse?
And the four horse, not much speed whatsoever, will be close to the tail end.
Just on pace or your GSR? Because I think what's so hard about this race is nobody's gone two turns. I mean, we're going the mile on the 16th, and who wants to carry it this far?
The eight.
That's the horse I like.
Yeah,
the
Lake
eight.
Hamilton is
eight.
Not only is the eight the top GSR, Christina, but it's also the Equine Edge long shot. So there's a couple of algorithms. And then, as it applies to the win percentages, the five horse has a big win percentage at 33%, but a very low GSR. Mm. So I don't know that this horse is going to get the distance.
Explain the GSR.
So genetic strength rating is what it is, and it goes back three generations of family, aunts, uncles, parents, everything, and siblings, and looks at the results of them, the class of the horses, how much they're winning, things like that. And it's an extremely wonderful number, and it's really good with horses doing something for the first time.
Like stretching out, in this case. The only person that is going to be unhappy about this potential to play this horse in the mandatory is the trainer, Carl Broberg, because he can't play this race because they got to give him a different race because he's obviously involved. There's no Broberg, and he can't. He might be up banging the window.
The horse has had some trouble in his races, too. I mean, you can find excuses for both of his races.
Slow traffic in the last race and that. He's coming out of straight maidens and that, and dropping to 40. I mean, he's definitely part of the pace of the race, I'm sure of that.
Well, then he's got a huge edge, because there's nobody here.
Well, the 8, we show the 8 as the second top pace number, and with that big GSR, it's 7-2 on the Equinedge morning line. The horse is 7-2 right now. So there's a lot pointing towards this 8 horse for sure, and also being the Equinedge long shot. And you're getting 4-1 as well. This would be a wonderful play in this tournament.
In the tournament, it would be, Scotty, because you're looking at, what, the third choice, and $10 in the place price would be probably $14 when it's all said and done would be pretty useful right now.
And, yeah, the post position affords this horse to get a good trip behind the one from what I see.
The two horse that I originally liked in the things being over bet, as far as I'm concerned, in that.
Would you move off a horse like that? 6-1 is too low for you?
Yeah, these are Arkansas breds or cheap horses and that. If I'm going to play the race, I'm going for the 21-1 shot like I did the last time in that. And I'm going to take a shot that Tammy Hornsby can win.
What is it with these Canadian, with the Canadian players? You, Tommy Hammer, Ray Arsenault, 21-1, 38-1. That was last year when Ray, remember when Ray walked up? We had a we had a mandatory race last year. Ray walks. Ray, what would you do here? I go with the 5. I said 28-1. 5's the play. Boom.
Yep. I remember that.
Last
year,
it was unbelievable.
It was unreal.
The Ray Arsenault, he's amazing. We'll get to Ray and Jerry McClellan. They're behind the gate.
Had to have needed the last race, so it's not without a look.
I watched the replay of the two horse and that. He couldn't stand up on the track.
Yeah.
He come around the last turn and that, and he was, you know, weaving like like he was a boxer and that.
I noticed that the Equinedge morning line on this horse was 8-1, so there's something there.
Yeah. He's the horse. I'm going to do the same thing as I did at Laurel. I liked the 9 horse coming in. They made him 9-5. I went off and took the Mike Conn battle horse and that.
Right.
He didn't stay as close to the pace. Being a sprinter, I thought he'd stay closer to the pace, and he didn't.
Yeah.
I'm going to change my mind here, so that means the 2 will win. Off the 2, and I'm going to take the long shot, the 4. He was running his best of any horse.
I just want fixed odds that the 1's going to get the lead. That's all I want. And then the 8 horse will be sitting in second.
Just about set here. And, they're off, except they're not off on the internet. That is going to kill us here. There we go.
Bolivar is painting on the outside of all in good time. Going to show the way. The Bolivar, Jim Ned, Outlaw Run on the outside is 3 wide and 4th. And then just 1 length of Lake Hamilton. He's starting to tuck in 5th. Followed a length farther back by Seeking Chrome. He's 6th. And Storm Strategy is outside of him.
That's the bright gray black apple singing through. Trailing the field as they advance up the back stretch. Kylie Jordan and All in Good Time leading the way here. This long shot by 3 parts of a length to Bolivar. Outlaw Run with a wide path after going wide around the clubhouse turn. Jim Ned is 4th, tucked right in on the inside. And Lake Hamilton is alongside him in 5th with a half mile to go. Storm Strategy is within reach if good enough. He's 6th while 3 wide on the outside. Side 2 to the finish. And now prop. Crowded up front, Bolivar is making his bid. Bolivar to the lead by a neck. Then Outlaw Run. All in
ten is
good
loaded.
Time drops back.
Ten
Storm
is loaded.
Strategy is lurking, and farther out, Black Apple is making an imposing bid and swinging up 4 wide. Jim Ned in behind him. They straighten away. Bolivar is not keeping up with them. Then Jim Ned on the inside. It's Black Apple, Ricardo Santana Jr. leading it in the final 16th. Storm Strategy is a clear 2nd, and Black Apple steps clear late.
Black Apple, 6-1. This is a nice horse for the mandatory.
Johnny Ortiz horse and that.
6-1, number 7-2, unofficially.
I watched the replay on him. I was very iffy about him.
Next
he closed well. That's all.
Scotty, what learning comes out of there for your
race? Last race.
Yeah.
Okay, so the top 3. win percentages it goes. The five horse was the top win at 33%. The eight was 16%, and the three was 16%. So none of the metrics in this race really lined up. And so you have to make a call. You know, you like to see when the metrics kind of line up and point towards a horse or two. In this race, it wasn't. The 10 horse was the top Equine Edge pick, and the 5 was the Equine Edge second pick. So, you know, they ran pretty good, but this 3 was pretty dominant over the 10. But if you were to take the top 4 win percentages and you were to box it, or you know what, if actually you took the top win percentage of the 4 and did a trifecta and you did a box, you would have hit the trifecta. But again, that's after the fact. It's usually you don't see many races where one of the metrics didn't have the horse, but that was a tough race on paper.
Well, and then when you start to fold in, when you start to fold in some of the human elements, whether it's jock movements, jock trainer angles, you know, John Ortiz has been a very tough guy to bet all winter. And it does feel, though, like Ortiz is maybe waking up here in the second half of the Oaklawn season.
This is exactly what he did. If you remember last year, he was dead for the first part of the Oaklawn meet, and then the last part of the meet, he couldn't go wrong in that. And the guy that's been hot this year on the Oaklawn meet is Hartman in that.
Hartman.
And I guess Norm Tate.
Norm Cassie. Yeah. Cassie's been insane.
I think you see John Ortiz focus a little more on Keeneland, too, which is part of the reason why things start to turn a little bit. You hold horses a little bit for some conditions when you know you have races like that coming up.
Christina, talk a little bit too. We're kind of focusing and giving an opportunity for some of the terrific, innovative equipment, the data-driven products that are out there, and it's one of the things that I love to celebrate. And because to me, Scotty's work with Equine Edge, Equibase's work with Race Lens, the ongoing efforts that Jerry Brown puts in at Thorograph, Folden. Here's Emily Gullickson and John with Optics EQ. We're seeing Mark Annenberg stepping aside after a 15-year project in time form. To me, it always throws into the face of this nonsense. The game is receding and is dying. It's so preposterous. Nobody is going to put in this kind of investment physically, financially, and emotionally. They're not making these investments to just lose money out of the graciousness of their heart. It's not a windmill tilting effort. You're doing it for several reasons. One is to help players, and also if it makes money, great. But
I'm kind of an information junkie, though. Like everything that you mentioned is up on the tabs of my computer every single day. I have my form, and then I have Racelens, I have Thorograph, I have the workouts on XBTV, I have Equine Edge. I shuttle back and forth between all of them for every race, if I have the time, at least.
1980, by the way, for Black Apple. A pretty nice win place,
too. Very nice. And the exact 310 was, that paid really nice as well, $29.90. So, but that was a tough race on paper. You know, it's easy to say after the fact, but you know, and here's what's really important to me with Equine, as it applies to Equine Edge. It has to be subjective. It can't be something where you're pointing people towards a horse, and then two, people have to be able to use it simply for themselves, so they teach themselves. Because if you just tell people what to play, they're never coming back. And it's super important that we have some tools that people can learn very easily for themselves. And that's what we're trying to do at Equine Edge anyways, and I think that horse racing is going to thrive with more of these handicapping tools, getting with the 21st century, by the way.
Well, I think you consider just young investors, people that are kind of trading, they want data points, they want percentages, they want that kind of statistical information that they can pull from that is familiar to them.
Especially this new generation, Christina. Like, you would not believe the average age of the Equine Edge customer is so much younger, and they tell me, I wouldn't even know what to do if I didn't have Equine Edge because they've never used anything else.
Well, and it's funny you say that because we had this discussion this week when it came to a couple different things. I had the fixed odds discussion at the HBPA convention, and Richard Ames from SIS, we talked about this
this divide, and I don't think it's useful to delineate millennials and Gen X and whatever the cross mark is, but you and Christina, you with Race Lens, and Scotty with Equine Edge, you might have a feel for what the cutoff has been and what, you know, where the dividing line is. And, you know, Rich, you and I and Brian, you know, all basically 60 plus. And, you know, I start with PPs. I then add Thoragraph and go from there. And whatever, you know, frankly, my next tool is probably workout reports. And that's basically what I'm able to use. Personally, I don't have the time to watch as many replays. When it comes to big events, yeah. I do. I'll watch Breeders' Cup, leading at the Breeders' Cup. But on a day-to-day basis, my snap decision-making is off of paper, PPs, Thoragraph, and maybe, you know, national turf.
To Scotty's point, though, is just to use the data that's available to teach yourself along the way. You know, for me with RaceLens, it's watching those replays, checking those statistics, back-checking the angles. And every time I take the time to do that, you learn something and you commit it to memory the more time that you spend with it. With Equine Edge, it can point you in the direction of a horse, and you'll learn something as you are using that data and that information to make your next selection. It's just about repetition. It's a muscle. It's your handicapping kind of muscle. You have to work it to get better at it.
Yes. You have to put the time in. A lot of people don't take that time. I'm looking right now because the top two pace numbers, or not pace numbers, but actually pace numbers and win percentage. The five is 50-something percent to win the race. I got there. The five was 58% to win that race at Aqueduct. And Alpine Queen, the six, was 17%. And then a big, big drop down. And so if you want to make bets, like, quickly, and you want to be able to, like, watch TVG and watch every single race go by and play, you can do that with Equine Edge if that's what you like to do. And a lot of these younger generation, they like action. You know, these sports bettors, I mean, they want information fast.
But here's the question, and Christina, you can talk about, fold in the Race Lens portion of the equation in terms of how quickly people, two things, how quickly people can learn the system. When I was pitching in on the tutorials, it had a big learning curve because the terminology is new, the graphics are different. Talk a little bit about the timing it takes, and then Scotty, same question for you.
I think you have to take it piece by piece and start with what you know. When you're looking at Race Lens, when you're looking at Equine Edge or any other piece of data, I mean, for the these new bettors and the folks that we're trying to cross over, from our research, at least at FanDuel, 40% of the folks that are making sports bets and then migrating into horse racing, they're making win bets. They just want to bet to win. So start with your jockey and trainer statistics. Start with those percentages on Race Lens. Start with a replay or two a day, and you just have to take it step by step, because I will say, for Race Lens, I think it's for the horse player that's willing to dedicate a little bit more time. Yeah. But once you do, to me now, I can't work without it. I'm so reliant on that sophisticated level of information that I can't go back at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I want to...
Someone could... I'm an old... I've been playing horses for 56 years in that. I went to the races first time in 68, and I'm 74 now. I've only ever used the form and that and so on. But I thought over the last 4 or 5 years, John's system, other systems, I'm basically computer illiterate. I've got a cell phone, but it's home in Barrie and that. Rome Mobility went out of business and that. I used it in the States and that. So I carry an iPad with me. None of these social networks and that. The only thing I do, I do own some Facebook stock and that. But but anyway, your system, John's, Christina's and that. I've often thought that if I could get it through my thick skull, how to understand it and that, I might be willing to buy it and that, because I think I'm a decent handicapper now. Yeah. I mean, I've got the results to show for it.
Of course.
But I thought over the last 3 or 4 years that if I could get one of these systems in my head and not confuse me with my, I'd likely be interested in doing it in that.
But so one of the things that we do at Equine Edge is I do coaching classes every week. And the coaching classes, people learn so much. In 1 hour of a coaching class, they learn almost, not how to use Equine Edge completely, but they get it. It clicks. And when you're using something new, I don't care what it is. Anytime it's new, it's overwhelming to people.
That's right.
So we try to lower the barrier to entry. And so by those coaching classes, it's made a huge, huge difference.
I think for me too, before I go on air doing a shift, I have to watch the replays. I have to have something to say. I have to look up the statistics and the information myself. But I use Equine Edge as my spell check, for lack of a better term. Like, I want to go through and see what I like first, kind of the long way.
Yeah.
And then I want to go back and look at what Equine Edge says. And if there's a horse that you have that I don't, I need to go back again and I need to see why your program is sending me that way. And I didn't find that in the first place.
So one of the, go ahead, Richard.
I want to interject one thing. You know, there's a saying that you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but I'm an example of where you can, because a few years ago when I first met you, I had not known what Equine Edge is, and I had my way of handicapping and had certainly a certain level of success. But, you know, ever since I've been using your product, I've got you almost addicted now to Equine Edge. I've got it on my computer, but I always have the racing form. And when I go back and forth between the metrics that you have listed on the Equine Edge and I take a look at the racing form, it really has sharpened my focus. It's made me a better horse player, and I thank you for
that. Thank you so much for saying that. I will tell you, this is what we've seen, okay? The conversion of Equine Edge, meaning somebody goes over and tries to use Equine Edge, the conversion's been, unfortunately, very low. But when somebody is using it for about a month and it clicks, you know where retention is? 97%. We don't lose anybody. So it's to what you're saying, but somehow what we have to do, not just for Equine Edge, but for all the platforms, we have to somehow teach them, because to learn something new takes a lot of energy, especially when you're the older generation, for sure. I'm 57 years old, believe me. I don't like learning new things. I don't. So imagine if somebody's in their 60s or 70s and you've been using the form. Listen, on my own program, this is a true story, and there's nothing against the form at all. I just don't believe this generation is going to use the form. That's all it is. But on my own program, I still use the form for a year and a half before I could get off of it. I couldn't get off of it. You know, and again, that is nothing.
Like security blanket for a long time,
wasn't it? It was my security blanket. And it's nothing to do with the form, I promise you. I love the form. But I just truly in my heart don't believe that these poker players, these sports bettors, which we need, are going to use the form.
You've put in the legwork yourself, though, like you're saying, the coaching calls, and we do the webinars for Equibase and get people and walk you through how we handicap a race and show you the visual as well as the audio
as
it comes together.
Yes. The coaching classes have probably been the best thing we've done, and you see it by their reaction.
Are they online?
So they come online, and what we do is we go through live races, and I'm showing them how I'm handicapping and using it, and they're like, I had no idea. And it's all of a sudden like an aha moment. But when I do my shows, it's not the same reaction because it's moving so quickly.
I want to come back to this because I've got a concern that I voiced the other day about them, about those kinds of players and anybody using AI, for lack of a better term, not really knowing what they're looking at on the racetrack. And that's long term, that's a concern. It might not matter to a certain percentage, but I will come back to it. 2 minutes to Gulfstream 8.
Mandatory.
That's our next mandatory. It's a nice field. This was, I'm sorry that we're only having a minute left, because this caught my eye earlier today. Scotty, what do you got?
So the one thing I can tell you is there's some cheap speed in this race. The 9, the 1, the 10 horse, there's some real cheap speed in here. I think you could see a price in this race. None of the metrics are lining up in here. I will say this, the Equine Edge long shot is 6-1 on the Equine Edge morning line from an odds maker, 12-1. The horse is 6-1. It's got a decent GSR. I think this Call Me Harry is an interesting horse. The 3.
Blinkers on. Call me Harry today. What do we think of the one? How has the son of Mr. Speaker never been on the turf course?
Look at you.
I mean, and there's some speed. Horse coming out of Monmouth. I know you see a few layoff lines here and there, but you get Jaramillo on a horse like this on the inside at 45-1. Seen worse 45-1 shots.
There you go.
I know one thing in this race. I look at the Dr. Zemp, the brown horse in that. I see that he ran against Kinross. He ran against Order of Australia, Pearls Galore, Perfect Power, and so on in Europe. And that, I mean, if his distances over in Europe were 7 furlongs, and that's what he at today. If he's ready to go. I realize he's 9-5, but he should be 1-9 if he's ready to
go. It's the Equinage top pick.
It's first North. Chad with a Peter Brandt import and all that. Shockingly, Chad is 16% first time North America, which off the top of your head you wouldn't necessarily expect.
No, I would expect a lot higher than that as well. Another horse, guys, we should probably be looking at as far as a long shot goes, and it's getting bet right now, is this 12 horse. Throughout the last race, broke bad. This horse is tactical in a race that does seem to have a lot of speed. If I was worried about the 3 horse a little bit, Call Me Harry, it would be that they're adding blinkers, and I hope they're not going to try to be close to the pace here, because there's a lot faster speed than the 3. But the 12 horse could really, really sit a good trip here. It's got a low win percentage. The Equinage morning line's not that great. The GSR is not that great. But I see the pace melting here, and I see somebody coming from behind.
Well, if the pace melts here and they come from behind, I would say if Chad's horse doesn't win, Clement's will. I mean, they're both coming off long layoffs and that, so I don't know what the plans are in that for these horses. I don't know whether it reared at the start, tracked, led.
You know, one of the things we have to consider, guys, too, is that the rail's out to 42 feet. And so that really, especially with a full field like this, that does make it difficult for a horse to come from behind, get wide, so a horse could get loose.
Outside post at Gulfstream is so tough, too, even when the rails are down, if you're stuck outside on a narrow course like that. Puts you behind the 8 ball to start with.
The horse on the outside, this might have been your time to go back to Trombetta, because on the outside, here is Sky's Not Falling, 12-1 morning line, down to 6-1. It's got a little bit of tactical speed. I think it's dirtied up. His best races win this.
Unfortunately, on the turf, I can't bet Paco Lopez. If you watch his races on the turf, he should never be riding on the turf, as far as I'm concerned. It might be a controversial statement to make in that, but...
Are you going to put him in the winner's circle?
There's some people that say he shouldn't be riding at all. Turf or dirt.
I've seen some scary incidents in that. I'll tell you.
Every incident with Paco is scary.
Some jockeys in the room would tell you that... I got nothing against him personally or anything, but when I see him on a turf race, I get scared.
Back in my dad's day, they would have stopped that real quick. And back in my dad's day, they settled that in the room real quick, and you didn't dare put anybody in a bad spot again.
Slipstream.
He's put people in bad spots, and they've straightened them out, and he's got suspensions and so on.
And he's also gotten his... We should mention
Sky's Not Falling in 8.
Should mention as well that Slipstream, who has been a stake horse for Christophe Clement, that really hasn't gone forward really.
Sky's Not Falling.
Here we go.
And the Friday feature. There we go. Hey, race, and the leader is Chuck Willis, and Castellano in front by a length. Up on the outside, and a tugging First Empire into a joint second. Speaking is next. Call Me Harry works between horses. Gaffleon has stronghold of Dr. Zenth. He's fifth toward the rail. Sixth at this stage is Sky's Not Falling from Slipstream in seventh. Eighth and Out Wide starting over. And Out Wide starting over. Ninth is Hot Blooded. Eamon is tenth and last as they have less than half a mile to go. The leader is Chuck Willis. He's in front on the stretch out three parts of a length. Call Me Harry is second. Speaking is now third from First Empire, and in between horses, Dr. Zenth. Dr. Zenth tugging hard with no place to go yet. Slipstream is at the rail. Then back to Sky's Not Falling ahead of the gray starting over. Back Eamon and Hot Blooded. They run past the 3/8 of a mile mark, and now there's racetrack for Dr. Zenth, and Gaffleon takes full advantage of it. He's in the clear now. Chuck Willis is the target. There's a quarter of a mile left to go, and here comes Dr. Zenth on the outside to take on Chuck Willis, who cuts the corner, tries to fight him off. There's an 1/8 of a mile to go. Dr. Zenth now has to kick on, and he has the second. Sky's Not Falling is now third. Slipstream between horses late, but welcome to USA. Welcome to Dr. Zenth. The doctor wins by 3 in the end. Close then for second. Either Chuck Willis or starting over in 127. And one.
Well, Chad's horses between horses sitting fourth or fifth in that, I would have pressed my bet for as much as I could, because you know the horse is going to be ready to run and so on and that. As I said before the race, I really thought this horse was like 1-9.
And 9-5 ends up actually being a pretty acceptable price, no?
Absolutely, no. It's,
when I won back in 2010, late in the first day, there was a race at Santa Anita. I can't remember who the horse was in that, but it was a European horse, and that came over. And I would not normally take these type of prices in that. I was leading at the time, so I didn't really want to take a short price in that. But I looked at this horse. I can't remember who was training it, but it was over from a good trainer and France or England, and the trainer, whoever had him, he was a top grass trainer in that. I can't remember who it was, but it might have been Mandela, but I'm not sure. But anyways, he's 3-1, and they're making a California horse 4-5 or something in the race. I told someone before the race, just like I said in this last race, yeah. I said, this horse is 1-9.
Can't lose.
And I said, I'm going to take $8. They paid $8, $3.40. I took $11.40. And that, because, and he won as far as you wanted
like
to
the stretch.
I was surprised this horse didn't go further in the lane. Like I really thought he might really open up, but I didn't really. I'm far enough away. I can't really see Tyler's hands on the horse, whether he's even asking him or not.
Well, the horse has got a future, Christina. We'll talk to you over the weekend.
Yes,
but,
thank you for having me.
No, anytime. We'll see you during the weekend, all right?
I'm headed back tonight, actually.
Are you
back
really?
I'm here at 9 a.m. tomorrow at Santa Anita. So it was a quick trip, but glad to be here.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, of course, you must have shared a few shifts with him.
Yes,
on TVG over the years.
I was the second shift, believe me. Do you think I got a chance to work with Christina? I was like,
we did a few shows
TVG
together,
too.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
You train horses at one time?
Train?
Yeah.
No, I wish I had trained horses.
There was a McKeever that...
McKeever.
Andrew McKeever.
Yeah, he still trains. Yeah.
Still trains.
Yeah.
No
relation. He still trains. No relation that I know of anyways.
We love Andrew McKeever.
Yeah. I've never met Andrew before.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
He's terrific.
Christina likely doesn't remember that, but after I won in 2010, you interviewed me at Churchill Downs on the Breeders' Cup Day in that. I don't know whether you remember that. You were Christine Oliveira.
Yeah, yeah.
So on.
I think I do, because I was only there. I haven't been to Churchill very many times. I've never been to the Derby. I've only been to Churchill for a few Breeders'
Derby.
Cups here and there, so I think I do remember. Yeah.
It would be in... November 2011 and that. But,
yeah, and if I can,
you
guys,
you interviewed so many people in your life and that, but you were one of the first ones, and I was pretty nervous behind a microphone then and that.
Not anymore. Look at you now.
See, you helped me out with that.
Guys, what you see is what you get with Christina, I'll tell you that.
Well, for sure.
It's very kind.
One of the solid people that you ever want to meet.
Well, and the longevity obviously speaks for itself.
Who was the lady that... did the she was a former trainer and she did the Eclipse Awards
recently
Edwards.
Janine Edwards, yep.
Anyways, I remember when I got the Eclipse Award and that, I'm up there, and Mary Lou Whitney's before me and that. She got the special award.
That's right.
That
she got, yeah, she
and
did. You're right.
I'm
you're
sitting
right.
there.
That's right.
And I'm beside myself and that, having to get out in front of a stage of, at the Eclipse Awards and that. Anyways, I said, I don't know whether I can do this. And I remember her saying to me, "Don't worry, just pretend nobody's there and just be yourself." And that.
She was a hard speech to follow, too. She gave a beautiful speech that year.
Yeah, the first thing I said, it's pretty hard to follow Mary Lou Whitney.
Exactly. Christina, before you go.
Yes.
Queen of the Temple comes back for Dan
yes.
on Sunday in the Santa Ana.
She's doing well. You know, she's one of those horses that is so honest. If you go back and look at her replays, she runs her race every time. But true to that division, to these marathon fillies and mares, she's very one-paced. Everything needs to go her way. She's been second and third and so close to that graded stakes victory so many times. There's a big race with her name on it. You can count on her for the honest performance. But on everything just has to go her way, as it does for many of the horses in that type of a race.
Well, the one thing I would have been happy for her to win the Astor Stakes on opening day, but as it turns out, if I'm not mistaken, it was the last win for Burt Bacharach
yes.
while he was alive, Duvet Day.
Yes.
And
I had a funny conversation with Burt and with Jane a while back, because we have this joke that if you want to just stay home, if you don't want to do anything, what are you doing today? We say, I'm going to Club Duvet, meaning you're just going to stay in your bed all day. So Jane has promised me that the first foal out of Duvet Day will be Club Duvet on down the line.
It's a good name anyway. I love that.
That's great.
It actually should be Christina's
Club Duvet.
Club Duvet.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Christina Oliveris and the RaceLens product, and so fun to check in with her. She spends time with us every Breeders' Cup. Some excitement, it seems, at the fairgrounds in deep stretch, guys. This is the fairgrounds fifth. Looks like I'm actually hearing from Chad Schexnader. They're getting rain in at fairgrounds. And Chad's suggesting that tomorrow there's a chance turf could be a little iffy. At the very least, there'll be some give to the turf at fairgrounds tomorrow. This was a 7-2 winner with an 11-1 runner-up. That the fifth at fairgrounds.
Gulfstream and that, you got $9 for a horse that, as far as I was concerned, was 1-9 in the race.
That's a tremendous yeah. number. And in fact, let's give a quick, we're going to take a break too, and we'll come back. Scotty McKeever is here from Equine Edge. We'll talk more with Scotty. This is actually a perfect spot because 4:33 Eastern is the Tampa Bay Ninth, which is our next mandatory. We'll handicap that with Brian Troop, your 2010 NHC champ, Rich Eng, the champ of all ilk, the longtime turf publicist, as well as the longtime turf writer for the Las Vegas Review Journal, Scotty McKeever, TVG pundit, and the creator of Equine Edge, which has been just a sensation. We want to talk more about the product and just how it's taken root over the last calendar year. Probably our only break. Somehow we've gone through almost 2 hours here. This happens, the gates open at this thing, and it's a stampede. Let's take a break. We'll come back for the second half of this opening day at the NHC. I can tell you as we head out, Francis Bustani, $114 even, your leader, A.J. Benton, who stood with us about a half an hour ago. He is sitting second, 102.30. Evan Littman has forged his way to the third spot, 98.90. Shiloh Merwitz, who had a lead for a while, 98.10. And Gary Brouse, who's been on the leaderboard now for a good hour and change, he's sitting fifth right now, $95. We'll look at some other prominent names. We've got three more mandatories, and I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I think we got 13 races left on the afternoon. So
Golden Gate not being, with Santa Anita and Golden Gate being here. By the way, this Jim Meeks deserves a look at this, 9th and 10th with two entries. Incredible.
There's the first dual entry. They're hitting the wire at Oaklawn. Looks like 4-2. 4-2 in the Oaklawn 6. Back after this to the event center at Horseshoe Vegas, NHC 2023. Stay with us.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA